Good morning. I'd like to bring this meeting of House Education to order. It is 8:05 on Monday, March 29th, and all our little previous things, I think some of us have, I'll remind everybody about their cell phones and figure out how we can make sure.
I wish you would remind me to bring mine today.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Today's the 9th.
Today is the 9th.
It said the 29th. Oh. We gained some ground there, sir, that I'm not ready to concede.
Appreciate that, Representative Book. It is March 9th, and President or Representative Keller, Chair Seaton, Representative Munoz, Representative Gardner, Representative Edgman, and Representative Book. And today we're going to hear an overview of the Avant-Garde Learning Foundation's Alaska Native Teacher Initiative and Education Alignment Study. And we'll start that now, and then at 9 o'clock, if we haven't finished that discussion, we'll put it aside to take up House Bill 126, that's foster care and education of the homeless. And just for everybody's memory, we're dealing with the education issues of that bill. It'll next go to HESS. So those HESS issues will be taken up in that committee. And then if there's time and we haven't finished with the avant-garde in the hour, we'll come back and have further discussion on that. Any questions? Welcome back to everybody who went to Energy Council or home over the weekend. You missed some beautiful sunny weather. Here, I'm sure you got some back there too. So if no questions, let's go to the presenter for the Avant-Garde Learning Foundation. And would you come forward and introduce yourself with your name and make sure we have the name of your affiliation right? And
thank you.
Appreciate your coming forward and discussing this issue with us.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members of the Education Committee, my name is Don Shackelford, and I am Vice President of the Avant-Garde Learning Foundation. I'm a former high school English teacher, principal, assistant professor at UAA, and director of the Alaska Partnership for Teacher Enhancement at UAA. I graduated from West Anchorage High School and Alaska Methodist University and received my master's degree at UAA. I have lived in Alaska for 47 years. Thank you for inviting me to speak to you today about the foundation and the work we're doing in our state. We are first and foremost an educational foundation devoted to improving teaching and learning in Alaska. Avant-Garde, since its inception as a nonprofit organization in January of 2006, is committed to improving public education through the use of innovative, scientifically based practices and processes, and by forming strong partnerships with school districts, colleges and universities, and corporations. Recently, our board of directors voted to make Cameron Holloway Perez Berdia our chief executive officer. Cameron was raised in Barrow and has extensive experience working with and running several nonprofit organizations, both in Alaska and outside. We are pleased to have him return to Alaska to take the leadership at Avant-Garde. Our founder and president, Dr. Shirley Holloway, is someone many of you know from her years of public service to Alaska's children as a teacher, principal, superintendent, college president, commissioner of education, and member of the state school board. Her vision for the Avant-Garde Learning Foundation was to create a nonprofit organization that would help fill in the gaps in our educational system and find innovative ways to leverage our strengths to work together collectively and to experiment with pilot programs that could conceivably become permanent aspects of our educational system if they were proven to be effective. Our efforts then have been devoted to creating educational programs and initiatives, several examples of which the committee has before them in the packet you provided for this testimony. Please allow me to speak to some of our efforts.
And let me just interrupt for a moment. The committee should have in their packet the testimony. So if you're, we have some people shuffling paper trying to find it. So I don't want.
Well, I have the testimony, but I don't have anything else.
Should have.
Copies of the initiative.
Copies of the initiative and a performance-based teaching program.
Mr. Chairman, I think all we have is just copies of the text line.
Okay. Yeah. We'll wait just a minute and they're coming. Sure. And, Louis, apparently no one has it in their packets. So.
What's it look like?
There's this.
Yeah, I've got it.
You have them?
Yeah.
Okay, you have them. Everybody, I'll check just to make sure.
Bryce just forgot these, right?
What's that?
Bryce just forgot these, right?
Monday morning.
I forgot HB 27.
It is Monday morning. Yeah. I just don't want everybody looking around through the packet for you so that they can pay attention. Anybody else?
Just checking.
Need a copy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, there we go.
Thanks, sir. Our largest project is the Alaska Native Teacher Initiative. Shell Oil contacted Avant-Garde 2 years ago and asked us what sort of community support they could provide in several geographic areas of interest to Shell in our state. Dr. Holloway visited communities in rural Alaska and asked elders, mayors, school district superintendents, community leaders, and others about their needs and what most needed to be done to improve the lives of those who reside in rural Alaska communities such as theirs. And without exception, communities reported that there was an urgent need for more Alaska Native teachers in their schools. Community members mentioned the need for appropriate role models for their children, and superintendents talked about the high turnover of teachers in their schools. From that, Dr. Holloway put together a group of 30 educators, several of whom were Alaska Native, and community members, as a design team that held its meetings from January to May 2008. The design team became the vehicle for creation of the Alaska Native Teacher Initiative. 5 school districts, Aleutians East, Bristol Bay, Lake and Peninsula, North Slope, and Northwest Arctic, and 5 institutions of higher learning, Alaska Pacific University, Bristol Bay Community College, Chukchi Community College, Illisavik College, and the University of Alaska Southeast, became our original partners in the initiative. After months of meeting and working together, the design team crafted an initiative that supports rural Alaskans in their efforts to become teachers. As a result of the design team's work and through generous financial support from Shell, Avant-Garde now supports a cohort of 33 students who are currently taking their first course together this spring. We are also indirectly supporting some 97 students in our partner higher education schools through funds devoted to giving teacher candidates the support the design team designated as essential to recruiting and retaining Native and other rural Alaskans. Our design team found several previous teacher education programs that were designated for rural Alaskans and 2 current programs, RANA at APU and PETUS at UAS. These programs produced and continue to produce the 2 that I mentioned, many Alaskan teachers, including many who are still on the job and several who are on our design team. We found that a highly focused and clearly intentional process whereby teacher candidates receive a great deal of support, financial, personal, cultural, and educational, maximizes the candidates' chances of becoming certificated Alaskan teachers. If you're at all familiar with the UAA ANSEP program, with its focus on strong and consistent supports for its engineering students and candidates, you have some idea of what we mean. However, Avant-Garde's Alaska Native Teacher Initiative is decentralized and divided between our 5 partner school districts and institutions of higher learning, and thus literally spread across the state. We have contracted with the Institute of Social and Economic Research, ICER, the UAA, as our evaluator for this and all our projects. ICER will help us monitor the progress of the initiative by following our students all the way through the first years of their teaching. Our intent is to create a data-driven profile of our initiative and to analyze the impact our students make on their students in the public schools. If we are correct in our assumption that people from a culture who are well-trained and prepared as teachers will have a positive impact on student performance, and that these teachers will remain on the job in village schools for the duration of their careers, or certainly far beyond the tenure of most teachers from outside the village, then we will be back before this this committee and the legislature talking about how we can expand the initiative. This fall, we hope to add the University of Alaska Anchorage to our Alaska Native Teacher Initiative. We are currently seeking federal funding for our second cohort of teacher candidates. Many of our candidates are paraprofessionals who are currently working in their village schools. Avant-Garde also wants to reach down into the middle and high schools of rural Alaska to encourage and support young people who want to become teachers. We also plan to include two new school districts this fall, Southwest and Dillingham City Schools, as partners. The Alaska Native Teacher Initiative is an exciting effort, and we are dedicated to making it a success. Our students and our communities deserve the very best in the field of education. Another effort with which Avant-Garde is involved is the alignment study that was conducted for us by ICER. Part one of the study, which was paid for by Shell Oil, was published in time for the Commissioner of Education Summit last November in Anchorage. The question we asked ICER to explore was, what are the gaps in Alaska's public education system that are holding students back from academic success? The alignment study found two major areas of concern. The first was the fact that many young people enter school already behind their peers in terms of academic readiness. The need for quality early childhood education would seem to be the answer to this issue, although there are obvious fiscal implications. The second problematic area identified by ICER was in high school and the apparent disconnect between high school graduation and college entry. The study found that after passing the high school graduation qualifying exam, many students consider their high school career over. The fact is, the HSQE is essentially an eighth grade test taken by 10th graders who, upon passage of the test, are not adequately prepared for post-secondary education. High school students need to be challenged to take more demanding courses, tackle difficult subjects like another language, and be counseled to become better prepared to enter college or the workforce. Moreover, the University of Alaska's academic expectations for entering freshmen are often murky and difficult to fathom. A stronger connection needs to be made between high schools and our institutions of higher learning. Too many of our high school graduates are required to take non-credit developmental courses as freshmen in order to meet the minimal requirements for college-level English and mathematics courses. Avant-Garde is interested in data-driven discussions that move us beyond educational decisions that may not be based in fact. We also want to help create a dialogue between educators, citizens, and policymakers that will help us creatively and decisively address issues of common concern. This is why we commissioned the alignment study and why we are seeking funding from this legislature for the second part of the study, so that we may look more closely at the identified problem areas and help clarify where we need to go as a state. Another of Avant-Garde's projects is an online essential skills program for students in primary through high school called Skills Alaska. It employs two pieces of technology, skills assessment and skills tutor. Skills assessment is an instrument used by students, parents, and teachers to accurately assess students' math and language arts skills. Skills Tutor is a program that provides skill-building lessons for students in math and language arts. Over 40% of Alaska's public school students in eight school districts have access to Skills Alaska. And over the years, we have gathered data that show significant improvement in student skills when they faithfully utilize the programs. Teachers who utilize Skills Alaska report favorably on the diagnostic tools and the flexibility that allows them to create class, small group, and individual lessons for students in need of building their skills. Funding for Skills Alaska is currently being provided through United States Department of Education sources. The school districts involved with Skills Alaska are Aleutians East, Anchorage, Crystal Bay, Galena, Kenai, Kodiak, Lower Kuskokwim, and Nome. These are some examples of Avant-Garde's current work. We are excited by the positive reception we have gotten from other Alaskans and the amount of cooperation we continue to receive from our partners in education. We are optimistic about helping improving teaching and learning in our state. By forging partnerships between institutions and entities with common aims and concerns, we are creating a new way of looking at and solving our educational problems. Avant-Garde's clients are the students of Alaska. Our pledge is to help them receive a first-rate education, no matter where they live, rural or urban. Our commitment is to continue finding ways to leverage our state's strengths in order to address our educational weaknesses. This is why Avant-Garde was created, and this is why we hope to continue to play a pivotal role in public education in Alaska. Thank you, once again, for this opportunity to brief you on our work at the Avant-Garde Learning Foundation.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that, and obviously we have more than one topic for discussion here. So what I'd like to do is go through those separately so that we don't get mixed up going back and forth with questions. And some of this may get further developed in our discussion on Wednesday, which is talking about the dropout problem. We'll be having a round table at that time, and I noticed, you know, some of these things we will bring back up in more detail if we don't talk about them today. There's nothing from the chair saying don't talk about them today, but I just wanted to identify that we are going to be drilling down in depth on dropout and dropout prevention on Wednesday, and so there'll be several things here that I think that we'll want to bring up further at that time. Are there questions for Don? Representative Gardner.
Thank you. This is very, very exciting stuff, and maybe the most exciting stuff that I think we've heard this year. And it dovetails with some of the other presentations, but it's more focused. For example, the University of Alaska, their primary operating budget request was a K-12 outreach, and that's kind of what you're doing also. So I guess my question is, have you been working with them on that aspect? And the budget subcommittee did not support K-12 outreach and took out a big whack of that money. So is that something that you're aware of? And I guess the question also related to that is there any possibility of getting grants from the Recovery Act to move forward on the K-12 outreach or any part of your initiative?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gardner, we are aware that the university had asked for that funding, and we, of course, supported that. The outreach, one of the things that I mentioned in my testimony was the need to build a stronger relationship between the university and the K-12 system. So I think Avant-Garde's position would have been that we would have supported, and we do support, that sort of outreach. And that kind of cooperative agreement between, and that work between what the university does and what the K-12, what we do in that area is really important, that there be more cohesiveness there. Because as the alignment study indicated, one of the areas where we have some real difficulties for our kids getting out of high school in Alaska is that many of those kids are not prepared. And oftentimes these are really top-notch students who graduate first in their class in high school, and they have to take developmental courses, non-credit courses in college. And so there's work that needs to be done on both sides there, and the only way they can do that is to work together and not work separately. So as far as the president's call for a K-12 outreach, I think personally, I think that was a good idea, and I think we're going to have to revisit that at some point, I think, as a state, no matter what happens this year, because this issue is not going to go away. We're still going to produce high school students who graduate. We're still going to have the University of Alaska, and we're still going to have this, until we address it, this disconnect between being how well-prepared people are for college and then what it is that colleges in our state expect people to be able to do when they enter.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. And follow up. Well, when the cuts were made to the university budget request, the finance committee's chair said that she didn't think it was the university's responsibility, at least as far as the funding goes. So I guess I'd ask you, if you would agree with that, or whose responsibility it should be. Is that K-12, or does anybody know if it's in the K-12 budget, if there's money to work on this alignment issue?
And just to interject a little bit, I don't sit on the university subcommittee, but I asked that same question. Emma's told that they're that they added a $600,000 increment to the commissioner's budget, so that would be done by the K-12 initiative. Whether that's all correct or not, we'll have to find out. But that was the information that I was given. Uh-huh. So we'll.
I see the department.
The department may be shaking their head, but I had the same question. That was the response that I got. So we'll follow up and find out whether that is whether that made it all the way through or not.
Thank you.
Representative Munoz, and so I guess let's see.
Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Let's take the teacher training part first, and let's go through that. Representative Munoz.
Okay. On the teacher training, the native teacher training, how you say specifically that you're helping students specifically, could you tell me how that is done financially and otherwise?
What we've tried to do is to create a system of supports for people who are, for the most part, living in rural Alaska and who would like to become certificated teachers. Most of the people, as I mentioned in there, in this cohort that we're working with, are they're all adults, almost all of them. Many of them are paraprofessionals already working in the schools. And so what we've tried to do is to find ways to help them, and sometimes financially, but many of these folks are actually qualified as corporation members. They're qualified for funding through their native corporations, and we've tried to help people find ways to find money to be able to do what they need to do. We have cooperative agreements with their school district so that they can have time to work on their coursework and to spend time with us. In fact, we brought the entire cohort into Anchorage in January for a week, people from all over the state, so they could meet together and start their first class as their group together. Now, some of these folks have lots of college credit already. It's not like they're just beginning. But what they don't have is an entry point into how to become a teacher where they are right now. And so we want to help people get the kind of counseling and the kind of instruction from us and our folks that are working with us through the universities to find out where they are, what they need to do, what their coursework is, and where they need to go in order to be able to complete their certificates and become teachers. We think the other thing that we're trying to do is to help the universities and ourselves actually have a better understanding of the communities from which people come, so that we can be more culturally appropriate and we can appreciate the cultures that people come from and realize that those are actually social strengths. You know, it's not a deficit to be from a village; it's a strength in terms of knowing and understanding the children that they're working with. Our job is to help develop those strengths into classroom activities and to make it part of what they do as teachers. So we're trying to do a couple of things at once, which is sort of change the way people get into the teaching programs in Alaska if they're not traditional 18-year-olds going on to college, although we're coming to that. That's sort of our next step. But we want to help those folks who want to become teachers do it quicker. Currently, if a person is a paraprofessional in rural Alaska and taking one or two courses a semester, it's about an 8 to 10 year process to get your teaching certificate if you do it that way. And there are some obstacles. There's a thing called the Praxis Test, which is a test of skills in terms of mathematics and language arts that people have to be able to pass in order to be able to get into a degree program for education, a certification program. And those tests can be a stumbling block for people. So we're working with APU and some other institutions to find ways to help people work on those particular skills, because the skills obviously are important if you're going to be a teacher. It's important to be strong in both mathematics and English. But it's been a real stumbling block for a lot of people. It's kept a lot of people from going into the profession because they couldn't get over that particular hurdle. So we've concentrated on that. So we've tried to find the areas where people need the most assistance. And the transitional piece from what universities require and what the state requires in terms of certification and how to meet those, how to find that path, which is what Shirley Holloway calls it. It's a very difficult thing for people, and currently people are sort of on their own in that. In that process, unless they happen to be in one of these programs that I talked about, the one at APU and the one at UAS, which are very, they do this kind of supporting that we're talking about. We're talking about expanding that support to more people in rural Alaska.
And we will ask University of Alaska Southeast to come up and answer a few questions or explain their program in a few minutes, just so we don't get cross. Don, does this program use individual mentors, or how? I mean, I'm just trying to get a better handle on most of these classes. Then are going to be designed to be taken online.
Yes, sir.
A distance ed in the place where they currently reside, and then helping them through the system and see those roadblocks. Is that individual mentor assignments, or is that the whole core who came in once? Are you planning on doing that, and is that the methodology for finding out where individual stumbling blocks or roadblocks are?
That's a really good question, Mr. Chairman. We're trying to do a couple of different things. Mentoring is part of what we do. That navigation piece, one of the things that we're developing to help people navigate through the system is what each student's going to have an individualized learning plan. In other words, we're going to sit down, and we've already started this, and look at credits that people have already taken, where they've been, what they've done, and then help build a pathway for that person through whichever college and university they choose to go to, which can actually be any college or university in Alaska, because as you can see, we're associated with everybody at this point. And that requires really good guidance from people in the field. We have a program coordinator, a woman by the name of Anisha Elby, who lives in South Neck, and she is our coordinator for the entire program. And so she is in contact with each one of these students via telephone and email, and she's made personal trips out to several of the places. She's been up to Kotzebue, and she's, of course, very familiar with the area that she lives in. And a lot of our candidates are from that area. So there is there has to be what we call intentionality in this process. You have to really sort of be awake when you go into it and think about what that front door looks like for people, and is it a small door, is it a big door, and how do we help people get through that, and then what are the things in place to help a person once they get inside. And that's, so we're to answer your question, we are doing mentoring, we're doing navigation, we are giving people assistance in how they do what they do. And let me just, about the online question, you know, online is much more sophisticated now than it used to be, and it's much more interactive. So people can have chats, and they can have all kinds of really interactive stuff together. It's not just sitting by the phone and listening to somebody drone. So it's a much more, in terms of the classes and being able to hold meetings, it's much more interactive than it used to be, I think it gives students more of a feeling that they are part of a larger whole, and that they are part of a learning community, and I think that that's really important. So that technology has made this possible, really.
Great, thanks. Are there other questions about the on the teacher portion? I guess I had one, and that is on the school districts that you partnered with.
Yes, sir.
And maybe we'll need the department to come up, or you may have the answers. And that is, you know, we have the Moore versus Alaska case where we have students that are, you know, just not succeeding in school the way everybody thinks we need to. And are these school districts that you're partnering with the same as those school districts that have been identified in that situation?
I don't know. That the department would have to answer that question, sir.
Eddie, could you come forward for a minute?
Hey, Eddie, how you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good Monday morning.
Okay.
The I guess you heard the question, and what I was trying to do is on about the second page of the presentation, we're looking at the five school districts that have chose to partner are Aleutians East, Lake and Penn, North Slope, Northwest Arctic, were the school districts, and it appears to me that from memory, I don't remember those. Those seem to be a subset outside of the set that the state is attempting to work with those districts to improve education. And I just want to know if there's any disconnect between those, if the department is working with Avant-Garde on this Native Teacher Initiative. And so would you?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Eddie Jeans. I'm the Director of School Finance for the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development. Mr. Chairman, the five districts that we're currently intervening in and are the focus in the Moore case would be Lower Yukon School District, Northwest Arctic School District, Yukon Flats, Yukon Koyukuk, and the Ubiat School District.
Great. So I see that in these, the five that we're intervening in, and there's only in the five that are working on Native teachers, there's only one that corresponds. And so I just wanted to raise a flag. This may be something that the state might want to work with in our intervention, because, I mean, I think that we all recognize that Native teachers from rural Alaska that are going to probably be staying in that area is probably an extremely effective mechanism for getting consistency.
And Mr. Chairman, the legislature passed Senate Bill 241 that directed the university to look at just those issues. In fact, I know that they've done a report earlier this year to the combined committees. I believe it was a joint committee hearing. And yes, we are working very closely with the university in that effort, as well as Avant-Garde has had many conversations with the Commissioner of Education. So.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for Eddie while he's still up here?
Yes.
Representative Boot.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Mr. Jeans.
Good morning.
How you doing?
It's Monday morning.
And this is basically a question for you both, but as long as you're here, I'd like to know what the current efforts are for coordinating through the commissioner in this regard, to your knowledge, and then to the presenter. I'd like to have those answered.
Through the chair, Representative Book, as I mentioned, I know Shirley Holloway has had many conversations with the Commissioner of Education on these issues. And as I mentioned earlier, we are working with the university on their program to identify how we can get more teachers into the university system and how we can be effective in keeping teachers in rural Alaska. So that dialogue is ongoing.
Okay, good. And we're going to have the chancellor from Southeast come up and explain their program in a moment. Any other questions for Eddie while he's still here?
Yeah.
Representative Book.
I would like to have him sit here while there's a response in case he needed to respond to the presenters portion of it.
Well, he's really close, so okay. we've got 2 months. we will ask him back up if there's.
Well, I was just like hoping to get the response from the presenter as well now.
Sure.
Through the chair to Representative Boot. Cindy Curran from the department was on the design team for this teacher initiative, and she was an instrumental member of that team, came to all of our meetings and spent a great deal of time with us and helping us understand what we needed to do to be in compliance, obviously, with what the department has as its purview. And I know that, as Eddie says, Dr. Holloway has had many conversations with the commissioner about avant-garde and the work that we're doing, including this initiative. So it's, you know, we consider the department one of our partners, and we are always welcome their cooperation with us, and they've been very cooperative in those efforts. So I think that you know, one of the things that we've tried to do is to be inclusive in this, and not you know, Representative Gardner asked a question a while ago about whose responsibility it was to, I guess, to educate people. I think it's all of our responsibilities. It's the departments, the universities, it's K-12. And I think Shirley's vision is to have us work together as much as possible so that we can build on our strengths. So that's what we've been doing, and the commissioner is aware of our work, and I would expect that we'll be doing more things together in the coming.
Thank you.
Thank you, Don. And Representative Gardner. For
thank you.
I'll follow you.
I'm looking at this ICER study that was commissioned as part of your work, and their recommendations on number 4, it says establishing a council to coordinate education at all levels is a step in the right direction. What would be the benefit?
Representative Gardner?
Yes.
Before we go to the study, can we, or is this related to the teacher section?
No.
Okay. let's go on. Representative Edgman, did you have a question on the teacher education section? Okay. Yes. Is there anyone else?
A quick question. What defines an Alaskan Native under the not-for-profit? Is this somebody who's a shareholder, or is this somebody who's just got any level of blood quantum? For example, if you're a 32nd Alaskan Native, you consider Alaskan Native.
We haven't really defined it, drilled down that far. The fact is, this is really for rural Alaskans. We have in our first cohort a handful of non-native people who are committed to living in rural Alaska, who currently live in rural Alaska, and who want to teach in rural Alaska. They're in the program. But it's a good question. Basically, it's community members and people who come from a community. That's who we're interested in.
So just a quick follow, Mr.
Representative Edgman.
So you could almost title this Alaska Rural Teacher Initiative, and that would be almost more accurate than Alaska Native Teacher.
It might be, but that's really not. I think there's a reason why we called it the Alaska Native Teacher Initiative, because we know that most of the people that we're going to work with are going to be Alaska Native. That's a reality, and part of that reality has to do with the cultural component that I spoke to earlier, which is people come from a certain cultural milieu. They have a way of living that is distinctly different from other folks, and those folks have cultural understanding that people on the outside of that culture don't have. So we see that as a real benefit, as something that's a strength to build on, and that's why we call it Native, because we think that's a really important component of what we're trying to do here. And that it's something that sometimes in previous programs in Alaska, not the ones that are currently running, but previous ones, they've missed that point. It has been for rural Alaskans, and it's been there have been some disconnects.
Are there further questions on the teaching segment of this? Let's get the chancellor from UAS up and just a quick overview of your program, John, and how, if you see any differences or in the way you are at UAS are approaching.
Mr. Chair, my name, for the record, is Chancellor John Pugh, and I'm the Chancellor of the University of Alaska Southeast, and I do appreciate the opportunity to testify before you. I want to also say that I really appreciate Don Shackelford and Avant-Garde and what they're attempting to do in the state. And the University of Alaska Southeast has been a partner with Avant-Garde since the very beginning of their program, and in fact, we get $40,000, so I want, for the record, that supports our PETUS program that helps support our students. So I will talk a little bit about that program and what it is and what it does.
And before you go on, would you give us the
yes, I will.
Full name?
It is there, and I'll give it as historically because it makes a difference. The original program was PITAS, and it was preparing indigenous teachers for Alaska schools. And in our second grant with the federal government, we added administrators. So it is presently PITAAS, and it is preparing indigenous teachers for administrators for Alaska schools. So we added administrators in. And so we support both of those because there is a need for an increased number of Alaska Native administrators as well as teachers. Our program is 7 years old. The PETUS program, we made a request to USDOE, Department of Education, to try to address the issue of the shortage of Alaska Native teachers. And we focused primarily on two areas in our initial grant. The first area was Southeast, the villages and communities of Southeast Alaska. And then secondly, we had a partnership in our first grant with the Yukon-Kuskokwim School District. So two areas of the state that we tried to focus on. The model of the program really addresses the goals that Don Shackelford mentioned, that we were going to work with the districts by starting with getting mentors in the school districts who could then work with students who had an interest in becoming teachers. So our first year of the program was establishing a network of mentors in the school district. So outreach to K-12 was the idea. And then by the second year, we brought the mentors were to identify students who were indicating in those schools that they had an interest in education. And then we started with a summer program. And in that summer program of 3 weeks, those students would then not only get an idea of what it is to be a teacher, but also an idea of what kind of coursework they needed to take in high school in order to align with entering college. So the idea was that we recognized there were a lot of underprepared students when they came, and what was happening is many of those students were coming in saying they want to be teacher and disappearing after a year. So the idea was let's outreach to the schools and try to do work ahead of time. Now obviously that doesn't happen overnight, but that network is still in place 7 years later. We now focus only on the Southeast districts. We no longer have the Yukon-Kuskokwim piece of that. That was a little difficult from Juneau in terms of how you make those connections, and the students from that area were not as interested in coming to Juneau. We had a number of them who came to the summer camps, but when it came to actually enrolling at UAS, we were not their natural university to come to. Anchorage and Fairbanks were more natural. So it wasn't that we didn't get any students, but the numbers were very low. So in our second grant, we narrowed to Southeast Alaska. The most important thing, I think, is, as Don had mentioned, is so you start with trying to address students in high school, get them interested, and begin to get them and their parents to understand what is it that it takes to go on to college, to post-secondary education. But then once the students come, most of these students are what we call first-generation college attenders. In other words, their parents did not attend college. And it's very difficult for parents who did not attend college to understand and support students in college. So the second piece is putting in place a support system at the university that will help these students be successful. And that support includes financial aid. Because generally speaking, they don't have financial aid, so we have a very significant piece of putting it together. And the students originally got full scholarships. We now have a little tighter system where they get a full scholarship the first year, and then they have to perform to a certain level in order to continue that scholarship. They have to at least get a 2.0, and we continue. But we also work with the corporations. It's not just federal dollars. It's not just our university dollars. Sea Alaska Corporation, for example, committed to 5 scholarships, and we have others who have done that for this program. But the support network is so important, the tutoring, the ability. We have a rural and native center that works directly with these students as well as any other rural or native student, but particularly puts in, connects these students to the kind of tutoring they need for math, for English, or if they're falling behind, stays in contact with them. Why aren't you going to class? Those kinds of things. So it's intensive and, in a sense, intrusive, if you want it, because they sign on to the program, and when they sign on and get that money, they have certain responsibilities. It's a two-way street when they sign that contract. So we do intrusive advising, intrusive tutoring. And then the other part is the cultural component. When Mr. Shackelford said culturally responsive kind of education, we feel very strongly most of these students do need to have a connection to their culture that gives them a better idea of who they are and what they want to do if they're going back to the community, and strengthens their ability to go back to that community because they understand the culture that they're in. So we've strengthened our Alaska Native Language program. We've strengthened our Alaska Studies program so students can take those courses, or the minors. We have a minor in Alaska Studies to add to their degree program. I would say that I'll stop there, but we now are in our third cycle with our grant, and what we have done in our third cycle is we have added universities positions at Sitka and Ketchikan as well as Juneau to support students in those community and outlying communities, and we now support distance students who are in our Bachelor of Liberal Arts, and they were able to finish their Bachelor of Liberal Arts and then come back and do the Master's of the Art of Teaching. And I was telling Don about a young woman who was here for our Native Oratory Contest this weekend, named Amanda Bremer from Yakutat, who came for 2 years under the PS program, very good student, got very interested in Alaska Native language, Tlingit language, and now is back in her school district teaching Tlingit language and finishing her Bachelor of Liberal Arts, and she was telling me, and she'll be back to do her MAT. It's a very good model because she not only got her general education for 2 years here, she's now back in the district getting experience but continuing to take her coursework, and then she's going to come back and get her master's in the arts of teaching, which will be a full year of internship. So I'm excited that the model is actually sort of evolving even for young students right out of high school, so that it can strengthen their ability to, when they go out there, to have experiences that will enable them to stay and not essentially leave the profession because it's too difficult. I'll stop.
Great. Thank you, John. Representative Munoz.
Thank you, John. How many Native candidates do you have from here in Southeast Alaska?
Well, we get about 25 students a year into the PETUS program. And we have a total, I think, right now in our PETUS program, about 67 students. I think it's in that neighborhood. And you know, we obviously would like to have more, and we try, as I said earlier, we try hard, and I think the big thing is that those future teachers and the mentors in the school districts to get individuals interested and committed early on, because we have a lot of competition out there with ANSEP and health sciences and so on, so we really need to get out there and get students who are committed and keep them committed and as a part of it.
Great. Okay, any other? Thanks, John. Appreciate that explanation. Yeah. Let's go on to the next section, which was the alignment study.
Sir.
With ICER. And there were the two parts of that. One was, what was the gaps in Alaska public education system that are holding students back from academic success? And then the second was the need for early childhood education. The second one was a problematic area identified was in high school, and the apparent disconnect between high school graduation and college entrance. So let's focus on the first of those two, and then we'll go to the the high school and the college entrance section next. So, Representative Gardner.
Well, Mr. Chair, my question is sort of an umbrella over all of those issues.
We can take it.
Okay.
I'm just trying to get a little clarity here, so
right,
we don't
skip back and forth. I understand there's different elements,
and
one of the things the ICER study has recommended is that a council be formed to address the early education and student transitions and achievement gaps between white and minorities and teacher education and professional development and relationships between families and schools and this whole list of things. And I've become a little bit of a skeptic about councils to some degree. And it seems to me that all of those issues and the issues that Chair talked about really could fall under the umbrella of the Department of Education. I mean, if a council does some work and comes up with recommendations, they still have to sell them to the Department of Education and to the legislature. Whereas if the Department of Education is focused internally on all of these things, it's a time saver, and they've already got many of the tools. They can invite whoever they want to help them work on it. So what would be the benefit of having a council?
The benefit is if the council is constructed in a way so that it is an entity that can work with both the legislature and the department, you can strengthen your educational endeavors. Let me just back up. Lots of states have P16 or sometimes P20 councils, take you all the way through college or all the way through postgraduate. Many states have, like 37, 38. And they vary in their effectiveness. Some states have weak councils that are basically advisory boards that nobody takes their advice. Some states have created councils where they do real work and they look at real issues and are part of the educational discussion mix in a state. So it depends on how a council is created. There are arguments for and against it. I think that from ICER's perspective and from our perspective at Avant Garde, if a council was constructed in a way so that it was an active player in educational decision making, or at least in generating good ideas and looking at real issues, that sometimes the department spends a lot of time having to play catch up with what the feds ask them to do. And sometimes they're not asked to do, they're told to do. And the department has a lot of things on its hand. I'm not saying that and the department would have to be, I would think, a really active member of any kind of council. But it would only be one member. It would not be the only voice that would be at the table. And I think that one of the things, at least from my perspective, and I'm speaking for myself in Alaska, is that sometimes I think we make decisions in an echo chamber. And I'm not sure that we always have the kind of spirited and fully versed discussions that we need to have in order to be able to figure out what the best course of action may be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's exactly my point. Oftentimes the council's in an echo chamber, and whereas if it comes directly from the Department of Education and they look at all of these issues and invite stakeholders to participate and have what you know the normal process of changing regulations or policies that as public feedback and stakeholder feedback, it may save a step in our efforts.
And just to not playing the devil's advocate, mm-hmm. but the situation we are in right now is we have the agency, the department comes to us with some ideas, and we have to get agreement on those things through the legislature to have any effect. If we were doing everything right, we wouldn't probably be having many of the conversations, and we wouldn't have had to split out education from HESS to focus on all these aspects of education. So the other side of that is having a more public non-state alignment to at least raise the flags and to develop suggestions for programs that the public have a way to get to us without having something to come through the department. I know I've been very frustrated in that having the results-based data and looking at, in fact, one of the things we're going to talk about here is this early childhood education piece. What is the results-based data on how do we get early childhood education programs that will have significant long-lasting effects through the student's career? And, you know, we've asked for that last time, but we don't see that really presented to us. Does four-year-old kindergarten, does that get us where we want to, what, you know, how does that affect and how does that go through? So I think that non-department and non-legislative councils can sometimes bring issues to the table in a way that are clearer to the public and clearer to us in saying we've got a problem. So that's the other portion of having a council versus saying that the department will, you know, do everything. And I'm not at all saying that one is more efficient than the other, but sometimes they're actually looking at issues from different aspects. So that Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'll take Representative Gardner's question a step further, just so I better understand, because with if I'm not misreading this, is there a budget request that's on the table, or potentially to be a budget request? And what I need to better understand, Mr. Shackelford, is, and I'm reading from Dr. Holloway's letter on the third paragraph down, second sentence, it says, the various institutions must begin to work more cooperatively and closely if we're ever going to satisfactorily address the alignment issue. So that sounds to me like there's, I mean, might understand as a policymaker who's at some point going to vote on a budget item to assist your program, that we do have this sort of fundamental alignment issue in Alaska, that the department, the university, all the various organizations of my short time on this committee, we've seen come forward, but yet we have this fundamental issue hanging out there. This reminds me of work tackling the energy issue or economic development or land use management. We don't have an umbrella organization. Bring it all together. So is that what this is about?
Let me address the money issue first, because we have requested $22,000 to do from the legislature to do the second part of the alignment study. So that will be on the that will be before the legislature. I think that Dr. Holloway has a concern, as do many of us, that we have in Alaska a lot of really smart, dedicated, hardworking people in the field of education and citizens who are interested in education, as we all are and we should be, but that we could work together more effectively. And that's probably true of any organization that you could look at. The way that we are put together is, you know, there are these various, to use the trite phrase, silos that don't do as much communication between each other as would be, I think, preferred. And the fact that, you know, we're beginning to look, as the chair just pointed out, we're beginning to think about children from very early on all the way through their college. And we're beginning to think about what does it look like for a person to become educated and become a full-fledged citizen in this democracy. What do we need to do to be able to make that happen for all of our children? And I think that's a pretty revolutionary concept when you think about it, because we're not doing that for all of our children now. And it's not because people aren't trying, and it's not because people don't want to. It's because we're not. It's not happening. You're going to address the dropout problem next week or later this week? 50% of our kids don't make it through high school. So we have some really serious problems in Alaska that need to be addressed. And it won't be addressed by rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. We have to be able to look at what's really going on and understand that comprehensively and not tinker with it, but really think about it and make qualitative decisions about how best to proceed. And we need to make decisions based upon facts and research. And so the questions that the chair put forward about early childhood education, those are really excellent questions. And there are difficult questions to answer. But those are the kinds of things we need to be asking. So that's, I think, to, you know, I hate to speak for Dr. Holloway, but I know her pretty well. I think she has a lot of concern about where we are in terms of our ability to make the best kinds of educational decisions, not because people aren't trying or because they're not capable, but because of the way that we're structured sometimes, which is why we created Avant-Garde, which was to be sort of an outside organization that's not that big and that we can move fairly quickly upon the field and be able to influence and bring people together, because we're interested in bringing those forces together. And because we've done a lot of this work, we understand the difficulty of doing that, but we also understand that there's a lot of goodwill in Alaska to make that happen. It's just sometimes institutionally it's very difficult to do. A lot of it has to do with money and budgets. A lot of it has to do with people's positions, but it needs to be done.
So, Mr. Kidd, thank you. Representative Edgman.
So, thank you. That was a good response. And I guess to help me on my journey here to better understand your organization, and if I had this sort of organizational chart in my mind of Education Alaska, the Department of Education in terms of K through 12 is obviously going to play a prominent role. But where would your organization be relative to the department? Would you certainly wouldn't be a subset, but you would be an advisory.
We would be a brooding omnipresence, sir. That's what we'd be.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
A brooding omnipresence. In other words, we don't belong to any of those organizations. It's been really important for us not to be, even though some of our money comes from Shell Oil. I don't work for Shell Oil. They've funded us to do projects they're interested in, and we've done that. I don't work for the federal government. We have federal money to do Skills Alaska. We have some other grants that we're going to be going for in the near future, but we don't work for any of those institutions either. So we're sort of insiders working from the outside, if you will. And we sort of see our job as to help bring resources together, because both Shirley and I have worked here a long time, and we know how to make some of these things happen, and we know the right people, we think. Nobody else was doing that in the state. Everybody else had other things that they needed to do in order to fill obligations. Our obligation is to the students and the children of the state of Alaska, and to be as effective as possible to work on their behalf.
Okay, and what I would like to do is there's a couple of questions we want to pose, and then we're going to put this aside. People can have a chance to think about it for a little bit. If we get a chance to come back to it, we will hear later in our day. Representative Keller.
thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for your work in Avant-Garde, and thanks, Shirley. It's really super. And I just wanted to clarify your response. It was a very good response, and I heard it very carefully. But Representative Edgman, I think the answer was yes. We have a fundamental problem. If you don't mind a comment, that's what I have felt, and I think that's one that I look forward to taking up with this committee, trying to get on the 50,000-foot level on the education thing.
And I would like to pose a question on the second problematic area, was the high school and the disconnect between high school graduation and college entrance. And we're going to have a section, it's going to be a roundtable discussion on Wednesday about high school dropout. But I think that this also comes into it, because I want to make sure that we focus on what does high school graduation mean, and what is we've got two different modalities or two different goals the way education is set. One is seat time, which is almost graduation. You have to be so many semesters sitting in a seat, get so many semester hours with a passing grade, and you graduate, versus competency-based education. And I know the administration or the department is trying to move down to the middle college, trying to bring some competency. You know, we have the dual credits trying to bring down into the lower, into high school, some further goals and setting. But I think that the committee is really going to need to look at, on Wednesday, seat time equaling a diploma, or whether we're going to be looking at competency-based education, because it's very hard to keep kids actively engaged if, first of all, they pass their high school qualifying exam, so then they think they're done with high school when they get out of their sophomore year, and also if they're bored in a class, but they're, you know, you're moving at that the rate of that class, or if you're kind of left behind. So we've got several issues, but so we're going to need to look at that on Wednesday. But I want to, so I was posing that question, and maybe since it's part of yours, this alignment problem, if you're going to be around, we'd like to talk to you about that later. But we want to set this aside. Are there any other questions that people want to pose for Avant-Garde so that they'll be prepared when they come back up?
We'll have them back on Wednesday.
I don't know if Don will be around on Wednesday. You might be able to be here by on audio conference.
I could probably do audio.
Okay. That'd be great. So let's put this aside, and we've had a bill that we've been talking about for a while here, HB 126, foster care. And we have a couple of amendments that are on our desk as well. Up here they are. And when we talked about this bill before, we had several questions or several things that we indicated were problematic to the committee, and that's a response for these amendments. So let's see. I'm trying to remember exactly where we were. Representative Guerra, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
We still had public testimony open, and I'm wondering whether you would like to see these amendments taken up first so that they can testify on the amendments, or do you want to have the testimony first and then we'll take up the amendments?
Mr. Chairman,
just a moment, Representative Edgman.
Just a quick interjection here. This is we're talking the committee substitute version S. Is that correct?
That's correct. We have the committee substitute before us.
Thank you.
Yeah. We adopted it as a working document.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I don't have a suggestion either way. Whatever the committee wants to do, the amendments are aimed to address the concerns that the chair had sent to me and that the members had made during the last committee hearing. So I think those are now addressed with the amendments, and whether you want to take them up now or after the testimony.
Okay. So we'll take the testimony first, and we're not going to rush anybody, but we do hope that people can keep their testimony fairly on point, and so that we can get to consideration of those amendments. So first of all, let's go to Teresa Lombardo. Yes. Representative Guerra.
Oh, I'm sorry about that, Mr. Chair. I always know her as Teresa Tenori, the former director of DFYS, but it's but you're right.
Teresa Tenori, are you there? Okay, let's go to Amada Medevir.
But you here?
We can hear you fine. Would you go ahead and identify yourself for the record and who you represent and give us your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to apologize ahead of time. I have a bit of a cold, so my voice is in and out. But for the record, my name is Amanda Mativier, and I'm the coordinator of Facing Foster Care in Alaska, or FFCA. And I'm also an alumni of Alaska's foster care system, as well as a foster parent. So thank you for giving me the opportunity today to provide testimony. I'm giving testimony in support of House Bill 126 on behalf of FFCA.
And let me interrupt just for a moment, and just so everyone that's testifying is aware that we're only dealing with the educational aspects of this bill. So if you have testimony on the other issues, it'll be taken up in the Health and Social Services Committee. If you could hold that, because that's the next committee referral. Thanks.
Thank you. To give you a little background, I'll try and be brief. FFCA is Alaska's only statewide advocacy organization made up of youth in foster care and those who have aged out of the foster care system. And what we do is we work to improve child welfare policy and practice by sharing our personal experiences about life in foster care in Alaska. House Bill 126 is a direct reflection of what youth in and from foster care have identified as a need. We created a policy agenda last year, and Representative Guerra was really responsive in addressing the needs identified by youth and alumni of foster care. We believe that children and youth in foster care deserve the same opportunities as any child who grows up in a home with their natural parents. When a child comes into state custody, ultimately the state becomes their parent. Currently, the state provides support to children and youth awaiting foster care placement under the McKinney-Vento Act, and we believe that school stability should be made available to all children and youth in foster care. We think it's an injustice to children to be moved first off from foster home to foster home and then to allow school changes on top of that. It's difficult enough to be removed from your family and then to have your social connections to teachers and friends taken away, because this just adds to the trauma that's already there from being bounced around in the system. And thinking about the post-secondary piece, for most young people, turning 18 doesn't mean that your parents automatically stop providing financial and emotional support. And for young people who are in foster care at age 16 and older, permanency is usually highly unlikely, so this means that adoption or guardianship is often not going to happen because people are just not willing to take in older youth, and so this means long-term foster care. So this means they age out of the system, and I'm sure you know that the statistics are staggering for young people who age out. There's a high rate of homelessness, substance abuse, incarceration. And so by providing opportunities for higher education, this allows for these young people to break the cycle and not fall into dependence on the system, as many of their parents have. And they also have an opportunity to better themselves. So if you have any questions, I'm available. And thank you for taking the time to listen to me.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Teresa, are you still online with us now?
Hi, this is Teresa.
Hi, would you identify yourself for the record and go ahead? And I don't know if you were online when I mentioned that we're dealing only with the educational aspects and the health and social service aspects will be dealt with in the next committee.
Okay, thank you, Chairman Seaton. For the record, my name is Teresa Tenori Lombardo, and I work for KC Family Programs. And I just wanted to thank you for the opportunity and other committee members for this opportunity to actually just want to give a few comments about the bill in front of you. And I understand it's just education that you're focusing on. But also, if there is some way we could be a resource to the committee and answering any other questions that you have. excuse me, I also have a cold. KC has been involved in a collaborative project involving the Alaska court system, the Office of Public Advocacy, the Office of Children's Services, the Anchorage School District, Facing Foster Care in Alaska, FFCA, and plus many others. Our focus has been to improve the educational outcomes for children and youth in foster care. We've learned many things over the past 2 to 3 years. We really purposely set out to make sure we're collaborating and using the resources that are out there and connecting people together to really look at this outcome. And we think it really requires a cross-system look at these youth, children and youth in care. We started down this path for many reasons that you have already heard about, this data, the statistics, the alumni voices that told us over and over again that this was the one thing that that couldn't be taken away from them is their education. And we saw the data and the outcomes, as well as the more placement changes that youth experienced, the less likely they were going to finish school. The one thing that the legislation before you does that I wanted to comment on is that it, for the first time, puts education, the word education, in the child welfare statute, and then puts foster care or child welfare in the education statutes in Alaska. And I think this is a remarkable step in this cross-system work that's needed in order to really raise the awareness and change the work that's been going on. One of the things, one of the things that we worked with the Alaska court system on is a checklist. It's a judicial education checklist that judges would use any time a child in need of aid was before them. They would ask a certain number of questions and types of questions. And we have found by that checklist is one tool, that option. It's an option for judges to use. Some use it, some don't. But it does. It has raised the awareness and the work, and has brought people together in a way that I think hasn't been seen before. Let's see. I think that's all I have to say right now. I think everything that has said before, I just wanted to echo. And again, we're a resource for the committee if you have any questions for us.
Thank you, Teresa. I appreciate that. Does anybody have any questions at this time? Seeing none, let's go to Barb Dexter.
Hi, my name is Barb Dexter, and I'm an educator with the Anchorage School District's Child in Transition Homeless Project. I'm a McKinney-Vento liaison for the district, and I wanted to speak in favor of particularly the importance of allowing foster children to stay in the school of origin. That's been a tremendous feat that we've accomplished in the Anchorage School District with children that are homeless, many of which are in foster care. Of the 420 youth K-12 that are in foster care in the Anchorage School District, we've worked with about 150 that have been in an emergency situation, so we've been able to provide some transportation support for those children. I want to advise that when we look at transportation costs, that it is expensive. However, it allows a child to remain in the same school, and by remaining in the same school, we don't see the months of lagging behind of changing from school to school. Additionally, as a secondary teacher, I really am in favor of the post-secondary funding and support that will be offered for children in foster care. And I'm also open for any questions about the McKinney-Vento numbers that we were talking about last week in our testimony and in the discussion of the bill.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there questions? Seeing none, is there anyone else in the public online that would like to testify on this bill? Is there anyone else in the audience from the public that would like to testify on this bill? Okay, I'm going to close public testimony. And we have Mike Lessman from Department of Health and Social Services, OCS, here. And we've got Eddie Jeans from the Department of Education for questions or comments. So do you guys want to come? Would you please come forward? And there were a couple items identified at last time, just so before we start. And one was the continuation through a year instead of possibly multiple years, and that's an amendment that we have before us, as and also the requirement on a district to expand this, but only to the extent that money is appropriated by the legislature. So just for your understanding, those are the two basic amendments that we have right now before us. So don't want to go down to that rabbit trail too much if you didn't know that those were there. So would you, Mike, give us identify yourself on the record and then give us your perspective on this bill and the education components of this from the view of the department?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike Lessman. I'm the Community Relations Manager for the Office of Children's Services, Department of Health and Social Services. Thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning, and I also want to thank Representative Guerra and his staff, who have always been tireless advocates for a better foster care system for all the children. And
Mike, can you pull that mic a little closer? Thanks. Just a little bit. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the educational piece of this bill is certainly supported by the Department of Health and Social Services. I don't know if you recall, but last year there was a bill in the Senate that was very similar. Senator Davis introduced the bill, and I don't believe it ever made its way out of the first committee of referral, but the department was there and supported that bill wholeheartedly. Same is the case here. The educational components of House Bill 126, the McKinney-Vento Act, all of those things are important to the Office of Children's Services, to the children and families we serve. The department supports those pieces of this bill.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there questions? Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Does the McKinney, is it Vento? Yes, Vento. The McKinney-Vento Act, does that fund transportation in our state, or does this take up that responsibility?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, I'm probably not the expert to talk about this issue. Perhaps Mr. Jeans or even Ms. Dexter would be the better. My answer is I believe that the funding comes to the school districts.
And we have Mr. Jeans here, so if you're not sure of that, that's fine. Representative Munoz, did you have any other questions
for Mike?
Can we get to this question? Yeah.
For the record, my name is Eddie Jeans. I'm the Director of School Finance for the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development. Currently, there's about $170,000 that comes through the department for the transportation component, and that funding is spread through four school districts: Anchorage, Juneau, Kenai, and Mat-Su. When Superintendent Como testified last week, and she spoke to $175,000 that they actually have to transfer out of operating funds to cover the entire cost of their program. So does all the funding come from the department or the feds? The answer is no. So this would require some additional state support for the proposed legislation. And Mr. Chairman, I have not had an opportunity to work with the districts to determine what a fiscal note would be for this at this time.
Okay, and we'll follow up, but I think that it would be interesting to find the fiscal note, but since the amendments are going to take it subject to appropriation,
correct,
then I believe that it's going to be indeterminate depending upon what we appropriate. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, I've been struggling with that this year because it's been my understanding that the Finance Committee will not accept an indeterminate fiscal note. So okay, it would be my intention to provide a fiscal note that probably has a range, and then it would be subject
Could
to appropriation.
Could you speak up a little closer, I guess? Or, yeah, people online can't hear when you're testifying, so go ahead. Oh, okay, we're fine.
Just okay, I was done.
You were, Representative Munoz, does that answer your question?
The fiscal notes we have are from the Department of Health and Social Services.
Correct.
We don't have an educational fiscal
note. You do not have an education fiscal note at this time.
Okay, and so that'll be coming before it goes to finance, is what I'm understanding, yes. Are there other questions for Eddie? Representative Keller.
This is actually for Mike. Thank you, Mr. Chair. When they, on the definition down there on page 2 of the homeless student, I just want to confirm that out-of-home care is all foster children. In other words, that's how we define children that are in foster care. Am I right?
Through the chair, Representative Keller, absolutely. If the Department of Health and Social Services petitions the court for custody of a child and that child has to be removed from his or her home and placed anywhere else, that is out-of-home care and quote-unquote foster care.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. If a child is living at someplace like Covenant House and is in state custody, does that happen? That's not exactly the same as foster care, is it?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, clarifying that that child had been awarded to the department's jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. If that child is in fact a ward of the state of Alaska, the stay at Covenant House would hopefully be a temporary situation, and the department would be working to get that child back to his or her placement that the department made.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Chair, well, perhaps I misunderstand the thrust of this legislation, because under McKinney-Vento, which we already are implementing, wouldn't the child at Covenant House be classed as sort of home in the homeless population? And the whole point of this bill is, if you find a foster home for a child in state custody who hadn't previously been in a foster placement, this bill attempts to apply McKinney-Vento to that child who's now in foster care, who otherwise loses the benefits of McKinney-Vento.
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, I think your understanding and my understanding are the same. For the kids that are in our department's custody, those that are awaiting a foster care placement, who have been removed from their homes and placed in an emergency setting, those are the children and youth that, for us, that this bill applies to. That's my understanding.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. James.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my understanding that this piece of legislation actually expands the McKinney-Vento Act beyond those children that are awaiting placement to children that are actually placed.
Thank you. That's exactly what I thought it was, that because one is a homeless population that currently has those services, and when they have a foster care placement, they're no longer homeless, but we want the provisions of McKinney-Vento to apply to them.
Representative Munoz.
Oh, thank you. On the waiver of tuition through state institutions, will there be a fiscal note identifying those costs as well? The appropriation cost?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, that would not be through the Department of Education. That would either be through the university system or post-secondary.
Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eddie, on page 3, right at the bottom line there, 31, it talks about it as well as an adequate education. Is the word adequate used elsewhere in statute to define or be, you know, yeah, to define our education, public education system?
Through the chair, Representative Keller, I don't think you're going to find the word adequate in Title 14 to help define the public school education system.
And follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Keller.
Thank you, Eddie. Are you aware, help me here, there's a lot of cases, court cases across the nation that are based on the state not supplying an adequate education, and I was wondering if, you know, if there's any liability we're incurring by using that term. That's my question.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, I think you're probably going to ask your legal department that question. It's this term, adequate education, would not appear in Title 14 as a definition or as a definition of the public school K-12 system. So I'm not sure that it's right. It's going to have the impact that you're concerned about, but you may want to ask your ledge legal.
And Representative Keller, would you point out again the page in
page
line?
3, line 31.
Thank you. Are there other questions for either Eddie or Mike? Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 2, just under school of origin, there's a term called permanently housed. Is that something that's defined in regs? It says a school of origin means that the school that the student attended when permanently housed. I don't know what permanently housed means.
And we can have the sponsor come up and answer that. So are there further questions for Eddie or Mike before they?
I'll just be right here.
Great. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Eddie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Guerra,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, the permanently housed language that will be taken out in one of the amendments, that's language that's used in McKinney-Vento to define homeless children. They used to be permanently housed. Now they don't have a home.
I think so your chair is hitting that little ball. There you go. Thanks.
So that's not really relevant to this part of the bill, and so we had Ledge Legal recraft that sentence, and the words permanently housed won't be in there anymore. We're trying to keep children in the same school they were in before their foster care placement, so that's what that line will say now.
Okay, thank you.
Are there further questions at this point?
Do you want to move in?
Sure. Representative Munoz.
Okay, I'd like to make a motion to move the First Amendment, please.
And that amendment would be?
Page 1. The amendment is 26-LS0309/S.4.
Okay, so we'll label S4 as amendment number 1.
And would that include all of the amendments?
That would include that full page, yes.
Okay. All right.
Object for?
We have an objection for discussion. Representative Keller? Representative Guerra, you want to explain the amendment briefly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are two provisions of this bill that require non-state entities to do things. And we don't traditionally require non-state entities to do things unless we give them money to do them. Otherwise, it's what we call an unfunded mandate. And so the first part is to say school districts only have to comply with these additional transportation requirements to the extent the state provides funding. So that they're not left on the hook to do something the state doesn't provide them funding for. So that's to the extent state funds are appropriated for this purpose language. And then also with our post-secondary education institutions, where we're going to say foster youth coming out of foster care should be entitled to room and board and tuition assistance so that they can attend college or job training. Those provisions are going to be subject to state funding. So that we're not requiring the university or a job training program to fund something that we're not giving them money for. And then the reverse is true, which is if we don't provide them funding, they're not required to do these things. So those are the two places where we wanted to make sure we didn't adopt an unfunded mandate.
Are there further questions on Amendment 4?
One.
Representative Gardner.
Amendment 1.
Yeah, S-4. No. Thank you, Representative Gardner. Representative Keller, do you wish to maintain your objection?
No.
Representative Keller has removed his objection. Are there any other objections? Seeing none, amendment number one is adopted. Representative Munoz.
Okay. Amendment number two, which is amendment 26-LS0309/S5. I would like to move this amendment.
Thank you. And I'll object for discussion. So we'll S-5 will be amendment number two. Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is what I call the everybody's concerns amendment. So I can go through it. I'll try and do it quickly, and just interrupt me if you want more information. The first two parts, page 1, line 9 and 12, those make clear that we're going to adopt this McKinney-Ventos concept, which is as a child moves between placements, they should stay in the same school if the parent and guardian and child feel that's in their best interest in the school. And McKinney-Vento has standards for involving the youth and the parent and the guardian in making that determination. But essentially the default will be if you're in the same locality, you stay in the same school and we'll just provide transportation funding. The chair said, well, do we do that for the next 10 years? And the answer is no, it's through the end of the school year. Or if it's summer school, through the end of the summer school term. And then when the new term starts, the presumption is you'll go to the new school where you reside. The chair mentioned that we don't normally refer to federal law without saying that it's the federal law that's in existence as of today. We wouldn't want to adopt the McKinney-Vento law and any changes Congress makes in the future. So what page 1, line 13 says is we're adopting those same school standards as they exist today in the law because we know what they are. But if Congress were to change the federal law, we wouldn't be adopting those new changes in the future without coming back and adopting them. So we don't want to adopt something that we don't know what it is, essentially. Let's see. The next section from page 1, carrying over to the top of page 2, addresses Representative Edgman's concern. This bill applies to foster children. McKinney-Vento only applied to a small portion of foster children and then homeless children. We're attempting to keep the child in the same school of origin, which is the school that they were in before the new foster care placement. And so that's what that part does. We take out the language that caused Representative Benjamin the concern.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Back to the bill sponsor, you said new school of placement. Are we talking about a foster child who they were with their parents and then they become a foster child and the school they were at when they were with their parents? Is that what we're?
The school of origin with this amendment will be defined as the school that they were in before the last before this new placement. So you're in school A, you're in emergency foster home A, then OCS moves you to foster home B across town. The school of origin is the one that you were just in prior, and that's the one that we'll try and keep you in, provided that it's in the best interest of the child.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Edgman.
And just a follow-up, so I'm trying to figure this out. So if you were in a school, let's say with your parents for X number of years, and then you go to a foster home for just a short period of time, then you go to a second foster parents, the child would not go back to the school if they were in when they were with their parents, but they would go back to the first foster parents in that school?
Not exactly. What you would try and do in that circumstance, the child is now bounced from one to the second to the third place.
Mm-hmm.
As they're bouncing between those three places, you want them in that same first school through the end of the term so that they don't change schools as they bounce.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. And just so the committee understands, Mr. Chair, that oftentimes when kids are removed from their parents, the state doesn't know if they're going to be home in 2 days or if they need a long-term placement, their initial kind of evaluation period. And so oftentimes they go into a temporary home that's never intended to be for more than, I think it's 30 days, something like that. And that's part of the placement, that they're not changing schools for that. And then if the parents don't do what they need to do immediately, then the kids would be moved to a more permanent placement. So they're
often moved several times early on. The first placement may not fit well, may not work. So that's one of the reasons that kids get bounced around.
But just so we're clear, we're not talking about the placement or the bounce around. We're just talking about maintaining the kid
in the original
school instead of bouncing them from one school across town for 30 days and back. And this, again, is, you know, it's within a district. So it's schools within a district. So just so we're clear on that as well. Go ahead, Representative Garrett.
Thank you. Unless
there's another question. No, okay, go ahead.
And just a brief segue to Representative Munoz's question. Right now, the funding for the class of children covered by McKinney-Vento, homeless children, and just those foster kids awaiting placement, the federal funding largely covers the cost. And like in Anchorage, they have to chip in an extra $170,000 just to meet that class. This additional group, the rest of the foster children who aren't covered by McKinney-Vento, we'd be providing state funds for. There aren't federal funds for those children.
Representative Keller.
Just for clarification, my mind is spinning here. On one hand, we're talking specifically about transportation of these foster children, you know, to the school where they have been going, and that's a really noble thing. Mm-hmm. But where I'm confused is when I get down, like, where there's requirements. It talks in Section 2 about the requirements under A, you know, and what we're doing is we're putting, you know, we're referencing this federal law, and personally, you know, amendment there on page 1, line 13, as those provisions existed on February 1st, 2009, it must include some requirements other than transportation that I'm not seeing. And I think, why not put those in the bill? And this is kind of a more sweeping question, but it ties to that aspect. So could you give us a list of what requirements are under A, please?
That's a fair question, Representative Keller, and I was just looking at that this morning. We've been focusing on the McKinney-Vento provisions on maintaining the child in the same school. And so if you look at page 1 of the bill, we're focusing on the provisions addressing the students. The provisions of McKinney-Vento on line 11 addressing the student's school of origin. There's some additional provisions that we don't necessarily intend to incorporate that go beyond that in McKinney-Vento. McKinney-Vento says keep the child in the same school. It says get that transcript to the new school as quick as possible. It says while the child is waiting for the transcript to move, it says if a child is moved to a new school, the child has a right to attend even though the transcript hasn't gotten there yet. We have provisions like that in this bill that address those things. There may be additional provisions in the McKinney-Vento Act that we don't intend to incorporate, and I do need to take a look at those. So I was looking at that this morning just to be clear about it.
The follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Keller.
Then on page 2, line 1, that language needs some work because it says the requirements in A, you know, and the requirements, for example, of the 7-day transfer and that kind of thing are not in A, you know, so just some language changes that are needed there. The word S appears several times there at the requirements, and if that's the case, then we need other references other than just subparagraph A.
Mr. Chair, Representative Keller, we really want to address right now really just the school of origin and transportation provisions of McKinney-Vento, and I would accept as a welcome conceptual amendment that if it turns out that there are other provisions of McKinney-Vento that I want to add into, that's my burden to figure those out and explain those to the committee, but for now to just limit it to the school of origin and transportation provisions of McKinney-Vento, I would entertain a conceptual amendment that on page 1, line 11, after the word school of origin, delete for providing a comparable education, that middle part. And so you've got the school of origin parts, the transportation services parts of McKinney-Vento, and unless I find some other portion of McKinney-Vento that I think is very important to put in to protect other foster youth, That would be my burden to try and add them in the next committee, but I think that's a good call by Representative Keller, and I just noticed that this morning.
Representative Keller.
Just a request to the chair. I would really request a clean CS to consider before, some time to consider before we take action on this bill.
Are there further questions on this? Will there's been a request for a amendment, but I think we do that as a separate amendment rather than trying to amend amendment number two. So let's go through amendment number two.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's see, so we are on, now we're on page two of the amendment, starting at page two, line 31, through the part that goes page three, line five. We want to provide financial assistance. So all on page two. The next set of amendments is on page two, line four through line 25 on the amendment page, on page two. What we've done is we provided financial assistance for foster youth coming out so they can go to attend post-secondary education. We think it's fine that part of that financial assistance include loans. It doesn't all have to be grant money. And there are already federal loans for low-income students that have delayed interest accrual, that have low interest rates. We don't need to create a new state loan program, and we had consulted with ACPE about this. And so we're taking out the provisions of the bill that talk about creating a new state loan program. We'll essentially have the foster youth apply for the available federal loans, and then the financial assistance will be the amount of need above what's available in federal grants and federal loans. And then we'll also make sure that foster youth are required to essentially apply for what else is available to minimize the state cost. That's what that group of amendments does. And page three, line 22. I think that's okay. Page three, line 22. That's the same part of it's the same group of amendments. Page three on the amendment that says section nine and then has the new one bolded and underlined sentence. This has to do with the ability of the state to extend foster care till age 21 and foster care benefits to age 21. There's actually, you'll hear this in Hess probably, there's actually federal funding to extend foster care to age 21, and this would allow OCS to do that.
Does this affect education?
Not really. Yeah. I can't think of any way that it does.
Okay.
This is really aimed at the extending the ability to stay in foster care to age 21 part of the bill, and then the sort of post-foster care transitional services part of the bill. So that just adds that one clause, and then we go to page four. The next section starts on the amendment, page 4, line 8, and it says page 1199, delete and insert. This has to do with the state has a transitional services program for foster youth called the Independent Living Program. They help foster youth till age 23. Right now, the help that they provide has holes in it, and we're trying to fill some of those holes, including we have a provision that says you should provide rental assistance for foster youth after they come out of care. That's what these two provisions do. They allow the state to do that until age 23. Right now the state does that till age 23. They'll provide, for example, 1 month of full rental assistance and then a half a month of rental assistance, another half a month, and that'll be it for the rental assistance. We've got a provision.
And Representative Gary, I just want to know, because I need to get from the department as well, is whether this is an educational part of this.
It's not.
Okay, if it's not, the committee has limited its discussion for this bill to the educational component. So I would like the committee to consider an amendment to the amendment on, and I think that this is included, page three and page four, and to delete those from the amendment. We just, they may be good things, but we haven't discussed them. I've tried to limit the discussion and the testimony here to educational aspects of the bill. Those will be taken up in the HES committee. So if, I mean, we've got a problem here if we're also, if we're putting amendments in on things that I've told people in public testimony that we're not considering here. So, Representative Guerra, are there,
Mr. Chair,
anything in section on page 2 and 3 of amendment number 2 that relate to the educational components of the bill?
No, Mr. Chair. They fix errors in the original drafting, and so
right,
just to that extent, I wouldn't mind having them in, but I understand your point.
Right. Okay. Representative
thank you. Speaking to the amendment you just offered, Mr. Chair, if we're going to move the bill on, and the bill incorporates things that we're not directly addressing because they're not education issues, I personally have no problem with incorporating the amendments requested by the sponsor so that when it gets to the next committee, it contains the elements that he would like to present them, and he doesn't have to kind of start with an amendment immediately.
Well, as a chairman, I think I've been pretty clear on this bill, especially that I wanted to limit our consideration of the bill to the aspects that dealt with education. I've given everybody, including the testifiers, that instruction. So the committee can vote however it wants, but I'm uncomfortable incorporating amendments that were not based on the educational aspects that we've considered and that we've had public testimony on. So I'll still offer the amendment, and that is to delete pages 3 and 4 from amendment number 2. Representative Booth.
Mr. Chairman, in your experience, I'm going to defer to your experience. The process that we're looking at doing here of a deletion of an amendment that's proposed as a means by which to process a bill, is that, in your experience, is that common?
Representative Book, the amendments are before the committee. The amendments were brought because I requested several areas that the committee was concerned about to be addressed. We've got those, and those all dealt with the educational aspects of the bill. And there are some additional parts of the amendment that if we want to take more time in this committee and go back and consider those. But like I say, normally when we have a bill that is in the committee, I don't ask the committee to restrict its consideration to one aspect of the bill. The bill sponsor wished to move this bill fairly quickly from committee, and this is the way that we can do that because it will be going to the HES committee. Could be a good parts of amendment. We haven't, as far as I'm concerned, we haven't considered those. We haven't allowed public testimony on those aspects of the bill, so I'm personally uncomfortable going outside that bounds and now amending things. So that's why I'm offering the amendment.
Thank you.
Representative Keller.
A suggestion. Again, I want to reiterate that I hope we don't move this bill today. But the sponsor, if I'm right, could come up with a sponsor substitute, right, to present to the next committee.
No.
That's the process.
Representative Keller, a sponsor substitute is only available until there's been a bill heard in the first committee.
Okay.
After there's been a hearing on a bill, sponsor substitutes are not allowed. But a committee substitute or an amendment can be proposed to the next committee, and the committee chair could incorporate those as their committee substitute at their jurisdiction.
Yes, I guess what I was saying, yeah, you're right, absolutely right, I'm embarrassed. But we can start with another CS in the next committee to incorporate these parts to the to the sponsor's wish. Oh, willing to do that.
Absolutely, and the next committee of referral can take up those as a committee substitute, can discuss those, or they can come up as an amendment for discussion. I'm just uncomfortable taking up these aspects of the bill in this committee since we set ground rules that were different than a normal consideration of the bill.
Mr. Chair,
so do we have
I
an objection?
Remove my objection.
Okay. So amendment. Are there further objections to the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment to the amendment passes, which deletes page 3 and 4 of amendment number 2. Are there further amendments to amendment number 2? Is there, let's see, I objected. Representative Keller.
again, could we make a, could we inquire of our drafters on the term adequate before we move this bill? That's very, very significant for education issues, and I, if I understand it right, it could have a real potential downside there if we leave that in there.
Absolutely, and I don't think that that's on Amendment R2, though, is it?
No.
Okay. Are there further questions on Amendment number 2? Seeing none, I'll remove my objection. Are there further objections to Amendment number 2? That's LS 0309/S-5. Dot 5. Seeing none, Amendment number 2 as amended. Is adopted. Do we have further amendments? We have a conceptual amendment. I will offer, and that is on page 1, line 11, removing the words "and" for providing comparable education. And I'm offering that as amendment number 3. And would you object for discussion?
Object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you. And there's objection. And Representative Guerra?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I steered you wrong with the wrong words to delete. I think it would be, as I said here, it would be deleting providing comparable education and. And that would make the sentence complete.
It would do the same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah. And the net effect, Mr. Chairman, would be the same thing. Yeah. You still have the "and" in there.
But there's an extra 4, I think, that makes it. I don't want to niggle, but
it's a conceptual amendment.
Sure, conceptual
and,
is fine, yeah.
So conceptual number 3 was offered. We have an objection. You maintain your objection, Representative Munoz?
No.
Representative Munoz removed her objection, so if there's no further objection, I seeing none, amendment number 3, page 1, line 11, removing the words "and for providing comparable education" are removed conceptually from the bill. Are there further amendments? And let's just take a brief at ease to discuss. We're back on the record, and Representative Munoz, would you like to make a conceptual motion?
Sure. On page 3, line 30, I would like to move the removal of the word "adequate."
And Munoz, Representative Munoz, is that line 31?
31. No, it's 30. In my draft.
You're on
31, I'm sorry. Sorry about that.
Okay, and I'll object for discussion. Are there, Representative Guerra, do you have a question on that?
No, Mr. Chair, I think that's proper to do a conceptual amendment on that. I think I don't share the concern that by putting the word "adequate" in there that we've added any requirements given the constitutional requirement that we provide all children in the state with an education that the courts have deemed to be at least adequate. But I certainly would not want to add in educational requirements that change those that we have in the education code. So I'm fine with the amendment.
Okay. Are there any further questions on that? I'll remove my objection. Are there other further objections? So we will have amendment number 4. It was a conceptual amendment by Representative Munoz, removing on page 3, line 31, the words "an adequate" from
just adequate.
No. As well as
"an," you need "an" before education.
Okay, so the amendment was removing the word "adequate," and it's a conceptual, so they can wordsmith it in Ledge Legal. So is there any question what the amendment is? Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, Amendment 4 has been adopted, and that is on page 3, line 31, removing the word "adequate" before education. Are there further amendments to 126? Seeing none, there's been a request to have CS drafted so that we can see all the language there. We will do that, and we will have this back before us at the next meeting. So if the committee
would... Well, this was a request.
And I'm honoring the request.
All right.
So,
all
right. We've got several complicated amendments here, deleting large sections, and okay. So I feel it's a reasonable request to be able to see the full bill.
I'll remove my abortion.
We don't have time to go back to looking at other things. If people would look at that CS before the next meeting so that we can come in and gavel in, and if there are no questions, we'll move the bill at that time. We'll be adjourned, and it is 10:07.
Say what?